What if everything you thought you knew about fascism was wrong? What if the political movement most associated with right-wing extremism actually originated from progressive leftist thought? This is the provocative thesis at the heart of Jonah Goldberg's Liberal Fascism. The book argues that fascism, far from being a phenomenon of the reactionary right, actually shares deep intellectual roots with modern liberalism through their common ancestor, early 20th century progressivism. The conventional understanding places fascism and communism as polar opposites, with liberalism somewhere in the middle. But Goldberg contends this is a propaganda triumph that masks minimal differences between these movements. Both were utopian visions that attracted international followings, and many fascist ideas were first developed in America by progressives before being exported to Europe, where Mussolini and Hitler implemented them. Fascism remains perhaps the most misunderstood political term in modern discourse. While academics offer complex definitions involving palingenetic populist ultranationalism or emphasizing national regeneration, in popular usage, fascist has become little more than a modern word for heretic, a label to brand opponents worthy of excommunication from political discourse. The left's understanding of fascism contains striking contradictions. Their logic seems to be that anything liberals approve of can't be fascist by definition, while conservative policies are inherently fascistic regardless of content. By treating fascism as exclusively right-wing, we miss its essential character as a revolutionary movement that sought to transcend traditional political categories. Fascism wasn't conservative or reactionary, it was radically forward-looking, embracing modern technology, mass politics, and state power to create a new man and a transformed society. Benito Mussolini began as a leading radical socialist before becoming the archetypal fascist. The son of a socialist blacksmith, he fled to Switzerland in 1902 with only a Karl Marx medallion, joining radicals including Lenin's colleague Angelica Bolabanov. After returning to Italy, he edited La Lotta di Classe, Class War, and emerged from imprisonment as Il Duce of Revolutionary Socialists years before becoming the Duce of Fascism. Mussolini enjoyed tremendous popularity among American progressives in the 1920s. The New York Times called him a Latin Teddy Roosevelt, while progressive writers were particularly enamored. Ida Tarbell praised the despot with a dimple, and Lincoln Steffens claimed God formed Mussolini out of the rib of Italy. Hitler's National Socialism was genuinely socialist. The Nazi Party used socialist imagery to attract communists, a red flag for the social idea, calling members comrades and appealing to class-conscious proletarians. Far from conservative, Hitler saw himself battling reactionaries. Both dictators viewed Roosevelt's New Deal as ideologically aligned with their movements, with the Nazi newspaper praising Roosevelt for adopting National Socialist strains of thought. Most Americans would be shocked to learn that the first full-fledged fascist dictatorship wasn't in Europe, but in the United States, under Woodrow Wilson. During World War I, Wilson established a police state with widespread censorship, imprisonment of political opponents, and government-sponsored vigilantism. Under the Espionage and Sedition Acts, mere criticism of the government could result in prison. A state official received 2.5 years for criticizing a Red Cross fundraiser. A filmmaker got 10 years for depicting British atrocities during the American Revolution. One man was tried simply for explaining why he didn't want to buy Liberty bonds. The Department of Justice arrested thousands without cause, warning enemies to obey the law, keep your mouth shut. The government created the American Protective League, APL, giving members Secret Service badges to spy on neighbors. In New York alone, the APL detained 50,000 men in slacker raids, with 2/3 later proven innocent. Most disturbing was that these measures came not from right-wing reactionaries, but self-described progressives seeking to build a better world through expanded state power. Wilson viewed the state as an organic expression of the people, dismissing constitutional democracy as merely a phase and rejecting natural rights as nonsense. The most disturbing link between progressivism and fascism was their shared enthusiasm for eugenics, embraced by leading progressive minds, from British socialist George Bernard Shaw to American Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes. Shaw advocated the socialization of the selective breeding of man, proposing to replace traditional marriage with state-guided polygamy and suggesting undesirables be eliminated, with many apologies, in a lethal chamber. American progressives were equally fervent. Holmes's notorious Buck v. Bell opinion permitted Virginia to sterilize Carrie Buck, declaring three generations of imbeciles are enough. Even W.E.B. Du Bois' talented tenth concept had eugenic undertones, lamenting that the Negro has not been breeding for an object. Margaret Sanger, founder of what later became Planned Parenthood, advanced eugenics under reproductive freedom, writing in 1922, "More children from the fit, less from the unfit. That is the chief issue of birth control." Her colleague H.G. Wells advocated for fewer and better children. The Catholic Church stood as the primary global institution opposing eugenics, with G.K. Chesterton facing ridicule for challenging what most thinking people considered the sophisticated position. Today's liberal fascism doesn't march in jackboots, but comes dressed in the language of compassion, diversity, and progress. It's a soft totalitarianism, managing every aspect of life supposedly for our own good. The danger lies in Americans surrendering freedom for a false promise of security. Not military security, but the figurative, quasi-religious security promised by the Third Way. Many progressives envision America as a campus where necessities are provided and the only crime is offending minorities. Hillary Clinton's It Takes a Village transforms from everything in the state to everything in the village. Her vision offers no public square for free citizens, but rather a spiritual community managed by the state. What makes this vision seductive is its appeal to our best instincts, compassion, community, and care for the vulnerable. When these values become the sole basis for politics, overriding individual liberty and constitutional constraints, they create a form of totalitarianism no less real for being well-intentioned. The greatest threat to freedom isn't overt tyranny, but its gradual erosion in the name of compassion and security. When government becomes responsible for all good, political cults emerge. The left's particular danger lies in claiming freedom from dogma while making compassion the political watchword, controlling discourse through intentions rather than facts. True liberalism defends power-limiting institutions, private property, free markets, individual liberty, and community self-determination. Progress comes from resolving inconsistencies within this tradition, not abandoning it for utopian social engineering. The human desire for community and meaning exists across political divides. Our challenge is channeling these impulses through freedom-preserving institutions rather than an all-encompassing state. The most dangerous threats to liberty often come not from its open opponents, but from those claiming to perfect it through expanded government power. Freedom disappears not with a bang, but in silence amid the comfort of being cared for. Combating fascism, hard or soft, right or left, begins with recognizing its nature and the appeal of trading liberty for security.